morning. It's so nice to see you. Good to be here again in the presence of God. I was sitting up the front, so I didn't see the new people get their chocolate, but welcome to those who are with us for the first time today. It's so good to have you here. We hope that you feel at home, feel blessed being among God's people at this time. So today, I want us to think, first of all, as we're thinking about the crowds that followed Jesus, take a moment to think of a time when you were in the midst of a large crowd. It may have been that you were in a particularly large city and there were lots of people around you, or maybe a sports event or a concert. Perhaps you were out on the streets on a protest. Or maybe there was a superstore having a sale and you were ready to burst in and find some bargains. So think of that time when you were in a large crowd. Was it a good experience? Was it something a bit overwhelming? Or perhaps did it feel a little threatening to you? So what I want you to do is take a moment to think of that and then talk with the people around you. Share about a time that you were in a crowd and how it was for you. Play an important role in Jesus' ministry. And as you read the story of Jesus' life, you will see stories of the crowd, sometimes in good light, sometimes in not so good light. Sometimes it's a bit negative what's happening in the crowd. Sometimes people are seeking Jesus' help, learning a new truth, or maybe being challenged by what they're hearing and being together. And ultimately, I suppose the question for a person in the crowd in Jesus' day is, will you move from the crowd to be closer to Jesus and maybe in the core of those who follow him and step out in some way, be committed in some way to him, become a disciple? And so as we read in the scriptures about the crowds, we can well imagine that some people were in the crowd but got no further than being in the crowd. And some people in the crowd thought, oh, I've had enough of this, and they went their own ways. But some in the crowd would come closer and closer and closer to Jesus, and their hearts would be touched and their lives would be changed. And it's interesting, for those who are just beginning to look at Jesus and explore Christianity and take some tentative steps towards him, the question comes, when will you step out? Step out from the crowd and actually take Jesus as your Lord. Become identified with him. And then on the other hand, perhaps for those who have been following Jesus for many years, are you still moving more closely toward him? Or have you started to go back and to disappear again into the crowd? Where are you as you walk with Jesus? So, we're just looking at the beginning of Mark's Gospel. We've begun looking into chapter 3. We're not really very far through this story at this point, but already Jesus' reputation is growing. And in some ways, it's almost beginning to threaten the fulfillment of his mission. In some ways, Jesus was the victim of his own success. And so in the early chapters of Mark, we see him begin to find a number of different obstacles, problems, some things that had the potential to derail his mission and his ministry. So Jesus' mission, Mark puts this really simply as to what Jesus' mission was. In Mark chapter 1 at verse 14, he says, Jesus went into Galilee proclaiming the good news of God. And then just a little bit later on, that's reinforced when Jesus says to his disciples, come on, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That's why I've come, to preach in the villages, to take the good news, the message of God out to others. But even in these first chapters, we begin to see some obstacles, some things arising that are beginning to hinder Jesus. One of them, his growing profile, he had attracted the attention of the authorities and they had begun to oppose him. And in the verses that we've read today, Jesus makes a strategic decision to withdraw from the city, particularly from the synagogue, and to go out into a more remote part of the lake. Initially, his ministry being in Capernaum, a seaside town, attending the local synagogue, going along there, being a part of things. But then, because his life began to be threatened, Jesus withdrew. And so we read in Mark 3, verse 6 and 7, then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. And Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake. And a large crowd from Galilee followed him. So both the Pharisees and the Herodians had decided the easiest way to deal with the problem of Jesus is to kill him. Let's just be done with this once and for all. You see, if you look back just a little way, you'll find that Jesus had exposed some of the evil in their hearts. They were plotting against Jesus, testing him, trying to trap him. And Jesus said, well, what's better to do on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil? And Jesus was there to do good, but they were there to do evil. And having been exposed by Jesus, they began to plot against him. He appeared to them to be a troublemaker who had broken the Sabbath, who had made claims of divinity, and this just couldn't, in their eyes, be tolerated. Now, in time, Jesus would walk into their sphere of influence and allow himself, in a sense, to walk into their trap, to be arrested by them, to be tried by them, to be put to death by them. But just at this moment, this was not the right time for that. And so he left the city. He withdrew so that he could continue his ministry. Because of the opposition, Jesus went elsewhere. Another problem that he faced was loud-mouthed demons. And Jesus, we read, gave them strict orders not to tell who he was. Now, this is a little tricky because there are a number of things going on in this situation. One of them is you simply cannot trust what demons say. They have a tendency to lie. Or even if they do tell the truth, you cannot trust their reasons for doing that. They are spiritual beings who are opposed to Jesus, and they are in this spiritual battle to stop him from fulfilling his mission. Now, in this instance, they told the truth, but they did it in a harmful way. It was true, as they said, that Jesus was and is the Son of God. However, Jesus didn't want them to be revealing this. And you can imagine in this big crowd of people that were coming to Jesus, there were those who had demons, and every now and then one of these demons would pipe up, you are the Son of God! And Jesus would say, be quiet. Be still. You see, what they were saying was true. Jesus is the Son of God. But he didn't want them to be the ones who were saying it, who were leading the message. Because this phrase, Son of God, is just packed with such huge meaning. And some of it and the way the people of his day understood it was in error. The people of Jesus' day were looking forward to the coming of a Messiah, the Son of God, with expectation. He would become the king. He would raise up an army. He would wipe out the Romans. He would raise up the nation of Israel to be a leading nation among the world. But this wasn't why Jesus had come. And so as the demons proclaimed that Jesus is the Son of God, among the crowd that would have raised expectations that Jesus didn't want the crowd to have in that way. It was a spiritual battle. If they could, the demons would have tried to stop Jesus from being a humble, suffering servant and rather to make him into this kingly figure. Much in the same way that Satan had tempted him, saying, if you worship me, I will give you all the kingdoms of this world and all their splendor. Well, that wasn't what Jesus was aiming at that time in his ministry. That was not the way he was taking. And he didn't want these demons to be putting this into people's minds, because Israel was a powder keg ready to explode with insurrection against the Romans if only the right leader could come along and be found. Now, sometime prior to this, not long after Jesus' birth, in 6 AD, Judas of Galilee led a failed revolt. And he was seen by many at the time to be the Messiah, the one who would lead them against the Romans. And you might even remember his name, because he's mentioned in the book of Acts by Gamaliel when John and Peter were on trial. And they were on trial because they were speaking about Jesus being risen from the dead. And the Jewish people, their leaders, were still trying to suppress what Jesus did. And Gamaliel said, don't be too worried about that, because this guy is probably the same as Judas of Galilee and others who have risen up before claiming to be messiahs, and they're found out to be wrong. So this Judas is mentioned there. And this Judas, his philosophy is also thought to have stirred in the hearts of the Jewish people up until the time of the great revolt in the mid-60s, when they decided they weren't going to pay tax to the Romans. And so the Romans brought in the army, crushed the rebellion, and in 66 AD destroyed the temple that the Jews worshipped at. And even one of Jesus' disciples, Simon the Zealot, was thought to be associated with this movement. So thoughts of rebellion were simmering, almost boiling under the surface of Jewish life. Indeed, there came a time in Jesus' ministry after the feeding of the 5,000 that the people wanted to... Whoops, that went funny. Wanted to make him king by force. And so Jesus, knowing this, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. Jesus wouldn't allow anyone to force him to be king in the manner the people wished. And it also became an issue before Pilate on his trial. And so Pilate asked Jesus, well, are you? Are you the king of the Jews? And at this point, Jesus was clear and claimed he was a king, but he insisted, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would rise up to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place. And so Jesus would talk about his kingdom, his divinity, in his way, in his time. But early in his ministry, he didn't want things to be mixed up, people's ideas to go running away with him. He was keeping some control over the way he was spoken about, and so he silenced the demons. And another thing that was getting in his way at this time were the crowds. The crowds gathering round him were making it difficult for him to pursue his ministry. So early in Mark's gospel, we read of Jesus healing a man with leprosy. And having healed the man with leprosy, Jesus said to him, don't tell anyone. Don't Don't tell people about this. Just go and show yourself to the priest. But the guy blabbed. Started talking freely, spreading the news far and wide. And so Mark tells us, as a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. Coming to him from everywhere. Now I digress for a moment. In Mark's gospel, there's this theme of privacy or secrecy. People were healed. The leper, the deaf man, the little girl that was raised, the blind man, all these in Mark's gospel. And Jesus said each time, don't tell anyone. Don't tell people about this. And to the demons who would preach, say he was the Son of God, he would command them to be silent. And although it may be strange to us, when Jesus said to Peter and the disciples, well, who do you say I am? And Peter said, well, you are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God. Jesus said to him, don't tell people. Don't tell people about that. Jesus commanded them, don't tell anyone. But this was not a very effective strategy for Jesus, because we read, the more he did so, the more he told them to keep quiet, the more they kept talking about it. Because people were overwhelmed with amazement. He's done everything well, they said. And you can just imagine the buzz that it created when Jesus healed someone that they knew. They knew this person had been blind. They knew this person had been sick. And now they were well, and they couldn't wait to tell other people about it. And so Jesus ends up with a struggle of what he was able to do because of all these people who were coming. And so he's trying to keep things, the lid on things a bit. He did this for at least a couple of reasons. One, because he wanted to define himself, who he was and what his mission was about. And perhaps secondly, because he was working to his Heavenly Father's timetable. And he didn't want to be rushed into situations that he wasn't ready for. In time, he would do all the things that his Father wanted him to do, but he didn't want either demons or Pharisees or the crowds pushing him. And so he was still trying to be compassionate and heal people, but please don't tell anyone that I've done this for you just yet. Just trying to keep a little bit of control. And so then Mark records that a large crowd followed him. This is a little bit of a weak description. A number of other Bible versions say a multitude. That to me sounds much better. A multitude of people were following Jesus. One of these was as many as 5,000 men, plus an untold number of women and children. Could have exceeded easily 10,000 people. Now, given that Eden Park holds close to 50,000, the crowds that follow Jesus perhaps don't appear to be large by today's standards. But by the standards of Jesus' day, these were big crowds. And they were gathering around him and trying to get as close to him as they could. And there were certain dangers with a crowd like that. A couple of weeks ago, crime statistics in England revealed a 21% increase in homicides, with a significant rise in Yorkshire. And in fact, in London, the homicides had fallen. In Yorkshire, there was a big spike, 21%. Now, that seems a little odd, given Yorkshire's a little bit of an out-of-the-way sort of place. Do you know the reason why? Does anyone know? This is really quite interesting. Because last year, the 96 deaths that occurred in the Hillsborough disaster in 1989 were finally declared to be manslaughter. And so they were put in that year's statistics. And all of a sudden, it seems as if the statistics have risen. So the Hillsborough disaster took place during a high-profile soccer match. Liverpool and Nottingham were in a semi-final in the FA Cup. And there were crowds outside the stadium. But the stadium was already full. And in these stands, it was just people all standing together. Nothing really to keep them apart from each other. And a fatal decision was made with the crowds outside to open a gate and let more people in. And the rush of the crowd from outside sort of pushed its way right through the whole crowd, and people at the front were crushed. 96 people died. 766 people were injured. And you might know of other examples where the force of a crowd has taken people off their feet, and perhaps they have been injured. Maybe you've been in a place where the crowd is going and it suddenly narrows and there's not enough room to get through, and you feel the crush of the people around you. And so the crush in this passage presented a possible danger. For Jesus had healed many, and those with diseases were pushing to touch him. And recognizing these dangers, Jesus had a boat. He said to the disciples, get a boat. Have it there ready, just in case. And having a boat near the shore seems to have been one of his strategies. As the crowd pushed forward, he could retreat into the lake. A little later on in chapter 4, he uses the boat as a preaching platform. And in these verses, Mark gives a list of places where people were coming from. So, Edomia, around there, Edom, from there. Oh, Jesus was at the time up around there, Sea of Galilee, and there were people who were coming from Tyre and from up a bit further in Sidon and from all around. So there were people coming from absolutely everywhere as the word about him spread. And I imagine it must have been quite interesting on the roads to watch these people coming and bringing sick people. And they're all heading in the same direction, trying to find out where Jesus was. And his fame just continued to grow. So much so, and driving out the demons and healing diseases, that Mark says the whole town gathered at the door. And later the disciples exclaimed, everyone is looking for you, Jesus. And the crowds became more and more intrusive, more and more demanding. Jesus couldn't walk about openly. And in our reading today, it becomes a bit of a frenzy, because people are no longer waiting for Jesus to come to them, but they're pushing forward to touch him. And you really can't blame the crowd for this. Imagine that you'd come from Tyre, Sidon, and you get down there, and it's near the end of the day, and there's a big crowd in front of you, all more sick people. And you think, well, maybe I won't be treated today. Or maybe Jesus will get in that little boat and he'll disappear, and my journey will have been in vain. You can imagine many reasons why people would be pushing forward. Heal me before the day is done. Later in the gospel we read, the Pharisees bemoaned Jesus' popularity, saying, look how the whole world has gone after him. So it's not hard to imagine this crush of people around him. You see, if all he had come to do was to heal the sick, all he had to do was wait, and the whole world would come. Anyone with symptoms of anything would come to be healed by him. If he wanted just to heal the sick, he could have gone to the nearest town, hired an office, put a shingle out the front, and arranged with his disciples to organize his schedule. And there would have been no end of work for him. But he'd come to do more than simply heal the sick. As important as that was, as willing as he was to heal people, he had come to do more. And in the gospel stories, when we think of the crowds, we find that they're fickle. In this story, they can't get enough of Jesus pushing towards them. Later, when his teaching challenges them, they leave. And then when he goes into Jerusalem, the pilgrims, the crowds, honor him with cries of Hosanna. And at his trial before Pilate, the crowds turn against him. Crucify him, crucify him. So what do we learn today? You know, this passage in Mark's gospel, a little bit of a summary, there's not actually very much important, in a sense, happening here. There's not a great dramatic story for us to really look into. We could almost skip past it for something more important. But this helps us. It helps us to see Jesus, what he's doing and what his strategies are. His strategic move to the lake. his strategic move to have a boat ready. His strategic way of dealing with the demons when they're giving their untimely and helpful proclamation of his divinity. If you look later in the scriptures, you'll find these things coming out again. And knowing about them now, you may see a pattern. And it may be able to speak to you more through the scriptures as you think about these things. And so I invite you to study them. Why was Jesus being so secretive? Look into the scriptures and find out. How was he going to deal with the people who would oppose him? And when would the time be right? And what's all this stuff about the time being right in Jesus' ministry? Look into it and study it some more. And particularly this thing about the crowds and some coming to follow him more closely. So next week, we get to look at the 18, the apostles, the people that Jesus is pulling out and saying, now I'm going to send you out because these crowds are too big for me. Now I'm going to send you out and you can minister. So where are we in all that? Where are we among the crowds? What are we doing? What are we committing ourselves to in the Lord? As a church, I hope we walk closely with our Lord, hearing his voice, obeying him, doing his bidding. Let's just take a little moment to silence our hearts.